Welcome to the Future Readiness Podcast. I am your host, Lakin Oladipo. First of all, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule, for tuning in and joining us on the Future Readiness Podcast. Today, I am joined by one of my colleagues, Reggie Jackson with Hub International. And today's episode is focused on personal branding, customer experience, and most importantly of all, digital asset. And not the type of digital assets that is typically associated with the finance world, but digital assets as relates to intellectual properties and why we believe it's important for all of us to begin to establish digital assets for ourselves. So stay tuned to the very end as we unpack and frame up this concept for you. Without further ado, let's get it started. You know, Reggie, you know, we've had many conversations in the past, talked about everything from cryptocurrency to future of work and things of that nature, that I thought it would just be good for us to collaborate on this podcast and just see where things go, because we both have insights and ideas, concepts that we believe the world can benefit from, right? And, you know, yes, everyone is creating a podcast here. Everyone is trying to make that move in this whole new digital realm. There is a lot of noise out there. And, you know, we want this podcast to be laser focused on speaking to the everyday people, because Future Readiness here is really about helping people obtain, because they can get information from anywhere, right? I mean, there's Google search out there. You know, you have a plethora of information, but the focus here is we want them to understand methodologies, right? Yeah. Frameworks, you know, ideas, concept, and begin to really start pondering on these things to really take a realistic look at how will this eventually or ultimately impact my life and my ability to secure a job and control my own livelihood, right? Because the game is changing. We talk about digital currency, that might be the new form of payment, right? Moving away from fiat currency. How's that going to impact an individual who's already poverty stricken and trying to come out of poverty, and now they have to daily decision-making. And this is why we exist, to really start sharing some of this stuff that it's real, right? It may not happen tomorrow, 3, 5, 10 years from now, things will change, right? And where does that leave you as a family man, right? As a single dad, single mom, you know, as a youth trying to earn money to live, basically, right? Your livelihood, which we all need. None of us is safe from that. That we all need to ensure we have a financial stability. And as the future progresses, the way we earn money, you know, future of work, and the type of currency we spend, it's all changing because of technology. So it's important that people understand that this shift is happening, is real. It's not the Matrix. It's not the movie, right? Yeah. This is real life. So where does that leave you? This is why we're here, man. So let's dive in. You know, we'll see where today's conversation takes us. And I think before we started, we were talking about what? LinkedIn?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like LinkedIn is definitely something I've been getting a little bit more focused on.
Right.
Just in this whole like digital branding age, people really, they really don't understand, no matter what you're doing right now, you're a brand.
Yeah.
Even if you're a part of another organization, people are still doing business with you. Mm-hmm. Your online presence is still there.
You know? It's huge.
So people are gonna see that.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn is definitely something I've been diving into a little bit more. I feel like it's a really underutilized
platform,
marketing tool, right?
Oh, marketing tool, gotcha.
It has so many features. It allows you to connect with almost anybody. Almost anybody has a LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And it's not, people don't really post original content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Instagrams and the Facebooks and things like that, those are really flooded right now, mm-hmm. which is still good.
Right.
You know, still should leverage those.
Right.
But I'm really tapping a little bit more into LinkedIn. I've been noticing that when you put original content, you get a very high, interaction.
Right.
Very high interaction, especially if it's actually, you know, giving good, you know,
value.
Right?
Yeah,
you're giving good value.
Absolutely.
I'm testing this out right now. What I've been doing is, after I get off the phone with anybody,
right,
it doesn't matter if, because I'm in commercial insurance.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter if I'm speaking with an underwriter, It doesn't matter if I'm speaking with a, you know, just a marketing representative from an insurance company, a client, anyone, I'm going to search them on LinkedIn and mm-hmm. I'm going to connect with them right after I get off the phone.
There you go. That's smart.
You know, so.
Because that allows you to expand your network, right?
Right.
And it speaks to your character and your ability as well, where exactly. It's kind of validating who you are, right? Without
right.
you having to really share that or say that in the midst of the conversation, right?
Exactly. Because yeah. yeah. if I get on the phone talking about I'm a commercial insurance specialist, right. then right after we get off the phone, I connect with you on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to click on it because you're like, I just talked with this guy.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm gonna he's connected with me now. I'm gonna click on it.
Right.
You're gonna see like up-to-date content about commercial insurance that's of value to pretty much any type of organization. So right then, that kind of puts you, whatever industry you're in, it's going to mm-hmm. set you aside, because even if you're in real estate, if yeah. you're in another type of finances, you're separating yourself from the next guy.
Yeah. Right? It kind of puts you in the forefront of that client,
right?
You know, or at least it keeps you front of mind, right, mm-hmm. of that particular client. One, you just had a verbal conversation, you know, with that prospect, right? Mm-hmm. Two, you followed up with some kind of connection engagement via social media platform, right? Which is LinkedIn, primarily leveraged by professionals, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's what I meant earlier, that it speaks on your behalf as well. Not only are they able to sift through the content and the valuable information you've already created and sharing on the LinkedIn platform, but now they can see your credential. Oh, this guy's been commercial insurance for 12 years. Yeah, exactly. Look who's connected with. And out of your network, they might have a second, third connection that they recognize, like, oh, that's my best friend over there. If he's connected with Reggie Jackson, then therefore the Reggie must be a good guy. So it speaks volumes, right?
Exactly.
On so many levels. So I love that tactic, man. I love that approach.
Here's a tiny little secret about LinkedIn that I figured out. They don't show your number of connections past 500.
They don't.
It says 500 plus.
Yeah.
So it looks more official mm-hmm. if you have 500 plus connections.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
and that should be the mark.
Yeah. It's under like four something, three, like
yeah.
it makes it look official. And also pay a little bit more money and get the premium. Get the premium because you can see who's looking at it.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you more insights as well,
yep.
right? That's one thing that is to come in a future episode, but as far as data being that new oil,
ooh,
right?
Man.
And paying for those premium subscription, it gives you that data that you need to gain more insight and make more informed business decision, right? Even if you were a professional in the corporate world, it gives you more insight, you know, to understand other companies that exist out there that maybe that dream job that you're looking for, right? Definitely, it's highly beneficial, man. So I agree with you 100% on that aspect. So that's
yeah,
great.
Data's the new currency.
Yeah, yeah. So we were talking about, you know, LinkedIn, and we'll close this LinkedIn aspect, you know, because this was like a sidebar conversation we're having before we hit record. So we're like, we might want to put this on the record, man.
Yeah.
So we were talking about, because you mentioned there's not enough activity or people are posting original content on LinkedIn, right? That did not maximize its capability for the most part. And, you know, I think there's two groups of people that are on that LinkedIn platform. One group is professionals that work in the corporate world that leverage it to showcase their talent, their credentials, and to just make professional connections. It's an extension of their resume in addition to a job search. LinkedIn has the ability to help you identify job opportunities, right, and things of that nature. So that class of people, I think, those are the ones you're speaking of that don't post the original content, right?
Yeah.
They're just on there to make connections and also soak up news that mm-hmm. might impact their industry and their profession, right? So that's why you don't see a lot of original content. And predominantly, those are the people who leverage LinkedIn. And these guys
are the consumers of the content.
Partially, right? Mm-hmm. So they're the consumer of the content as well as the contributors of mm-hmm. the content, right? Because they're also showcasing their skill set, you know, based on the content they decide to share, even if, whether it's original or not, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that content that they decide to share, it's professional nature. Here's a breaking news that's impacting my industry, right? Here's a piece of content that's impacting my profession, right? That I'm going to share with my network, my LinkedIn network community. So that class of people, that's how they typically approach, at least this has been my assessment, right? Coming from the corporate world, and I've seen the trend as well, right? Because that's typically how LinkedIn was leveraged. But then COVID, and you didn't see a lot of engagement on LinkedIn by many people. Right. But COVID-19 happened, right? More folks really had to come out of their shell, their comfort zone, and really begin to leverage social media. And those professionals came more engaged in LinkedIn, right? Yeah. But yet they're not creating original content. You know, it does take some mental fortitude to really get in front of a camera and push out original content. Right. And not everybody's equipped to that. And sometimes you have to build up to get to that point as well. Yeah. Right. So that class of people, that's how they typically leverage LinkedIn. And one key note before I move on to the other side of the spectrum is with that same class, it's important to understand that they work for an organization. So they have to be very selective in what they post on LinkedIn, because that could impact their job. They're like, you know, it could make them liable. Let's say they post something that goes against their company's belief, right, or the cultural norms of whatever employer that they serve. Even though there's rules and regulation out there, there's different creative ways for a manager or employer to, you know, fire you or let you go for whatever reason, right? So they have to be cognizant of that, right? So this is something that they have to factor in before they decide to post anything. But one thing I have also noticed is that these same group of people are a little bit more, they have a little more confidence. They have more courage now to kind of thread the needle, right, if you will. But not everyone is like that, but many play it safe. Then the other side of the spectrum, right, is people like you and I, right, who are leveraging it to really deliver valuable content to say, hey, you're too caught up in your daily hustle and bustle. So I'm going to spoon feed you some valuable information that I know is going to benefit you, right? As long as you're willing to take the time and listen. And then you do what you want with that information. But understand, I'm sharing a piece of information that I think would benefit you. I'm here for to assist you. Reach out. Let's have a conversation. I mean, there's no commitment there. You know, I'm just delivering you something of value. And that group of people is where I think LinkedIn is now accelerating, right? And these are the business coaches, the consultants, the business owners who are actually leveraging LinkedIn to seek out prospect, right? And to also share their knowledge base, you know, to serve as thought leaders, if you will. You have that class of people where they are now beginning to create more videos, more original content on LinkedIn. And, you know, they've been through that journey where I mentioned earlier, it takes a mental fortitude to build up to that point. And when you're trying to build a business or run a business, guess what? There's a lot of self-development that happens, right? So these guys are a little bit more comfortable in front of the camera, or at least they face that battle, right? To get past their, to work outside of their comfort zone, with that being said. So with that, yeah, absolutely, man. LinkedIn is a huge, valuable platform for professionals, businesses, and we all leverage it differently, right? And I think because of this influx of business owner realizing how to tap into LinkedIn to pull out ideal prospect or clients for their business or whatever it is that they're trying to sell, LinkedIn has changed their algorithm a little bit, right? They have changed the way you can connect with certain people, right? Mm-hmm. So not everyone can you just send a direct connection with, right?
Unless
you pay the premium. Exactly. Yep. So that's what one of the benefits of having a premium as well, right? More insight, more opportunity to connect top talent and highly valuable prospects, you know. So I love LinkedIn for that, but I think it's always important to be mindful that you have an array of users on that platform. And, you know, and for the most part, they're broken out into those two categories, right? So with that professional classification, you can't expect them to try to put original content out. As I mentioned, they have to be mindful of the impact that whatever it is they decide to share could have on their existing occupation, while the more entrepreneurial mindset folks, you know, they're just, you know, leveraging this thing to the max. But yeah.
You know, the whole thing about the paying the premium.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to understanding paying for things.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially I feel like in this you know, really entrepreneurial like time right now.
Yeah.
People are always they're trying to save so much money that I feel like they're to a detriment sometimes.
Because you're
gonna have to set aside something mm-hmm. for an investment in whatever you're doing.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the premium is maybe $100-something a year. I think mm-hmm. depending on, because I think I added some extra like sales things to give me some more insights and things like that.
Right.
But you gotta think like, what could your possible return be on $100-something a year?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people, well, I'm not paying for that. I'll do it all myself. Mm-hmm. I'll figure it out myself.
Right.
You got to pay to play.
You got to
set aside something in your budget
that's
for, okay, I'm going to make an investment in, you know, a form of a coach. Because a coach could come in so many different ways.
Absolutely,
It could be, you know, someone that is in your industry that mm-hmm. has done what you're trying to do at a high level.
Right.
And they already have the keys and the insights on how to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
That knowledge can't put a price on that knowledge. Because what if you can be taught how they were able to succeed,
mm-hmm.
you could, there is no cap on how you can multiply that.
Right.
You know, how you can multiply what they were able to do if they're able to give you those secrets. So that cost. So I feel like when you accept that, and when people accept that in their business, mm-hmm. it does so much well. I mean, so much better. Even to the point where people don't really want to invest in like someone else to help them with a different aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, that's valuable. And yeah, there's different caliber coaches out there, you know. And the beauty of having a coach is, you know, they assist you in kind of accelerating your learning curve. Because if you decide, yes, you can do it on your own, but if you decide to take that route, we all have to go through that entrepreneurial journey. I don't care who you are, right? And that journey is different for all of us. Your turnaround time to the point you reach success, whatever success looks like for you, could be short, you know, and mine could be long, right? Because we all have different journeys and we're all trying to build different types of businesses, right? Or we work in different industry. So it varies, you know, there's a diversity there. And having a coach, that's one of the benefit, right? So you have to, you know, you have to calculate, okay, it's going to cost me X amount of dollars monthly to have a coach for about XYZ sessions, right? But what value, what benefit do I gain from that investment, right? And do I make that back on the back end, right? And being able to accelerate your learning curve, that's invaluable, especially if you're in that entrepreneurial space,
right? A lot of those numbers people don't do up front.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's true.
I speak with, you know, some of my clients, I'll say, okay, you know, what do you expect your gross sales to be over the next 12 months?
Yeah.
Some people don't even
know
that. And then sometimes I'll have to kind of, because I'm used to working with so many of those types of businesses, like let's say if it's a contractor or, you know, some type of restaurant or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kind of, based on what they're doing, I can kind of estimate probably what they'll do the first year.
Right.
And sometimes I'll just kind of have to walk them through that. But that's also the benefit of just working with in an industry, because they'll be able to navigate you through, you know, all of the things, not just what they're talking with you about. Like an expert in the mortgage industry should be able to navigate you, you know, with credit and things like that as well, not just like the loan.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah, depending on their level of caliber, right?
Yeah, hopefully
you're working with the right, you know, personality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know, and that's the benefit of this podcast is that you're getting information from experts.
Right, right.
You know, that have access to high level information.
Right.
And are doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm helping people with these things, you know, daily in their business.
Right.
So I'm like privy to like the ins and outs of like what can go wrong,
mm-hmm.
what they're asking. Because people will ask their insurance
mm-hmm.
agent and their accountant anything.
Right.
People send all types of stuff that really doesn't have to necessarily
do with their insurance. Right.
Like, please help me.
But it's funny. I'm glad you shared that, right? What do you think? Why do you think that is?
I think that is because,
and then I'll tell you what,
I'm responsive to when people, if you're in one of those industries and you are responsive and you really bring value when you show the people that you care about their business,
yes,
they'll feel like you're their guy,
right?
Like, you know,
exactly.
Like everyone else is ignoring me. Like people ignore their clients all the time, and that's how you know that's how they lose
it, right?
But if you're the person that will always answer the phone, I mean, you know, my clients will text me, and some people will call me like 10 and late, and I don't answer that. But you know, I'll text them back in the morning, and you know, people don't get that from every professional that they're working with.
That's so true.
You know, within their business, so that's why they'll feel like, man, I'm having an issue. Like, I know Reggie's gonna answer the phone. That's really what it comes down to. I know Reggie's gonna answer the phone. Like, I know he's gonna answer my email, because if he doesn't answer my email, it's like something must be wrong.
Right.
You know, because that's just the type. Because I kind of value relationship.
Yeah, like, that's good, and rightfully so, man. Rightfully so.
That's more valuable than the whatever they're spending on the transaction is the relationship, because almost all, like most of my referrals come from clients, or you know, the relationships I built from like their friends and family and things like that. And people will just call me and say, hey, yeah, so-and-so gave me your number. They said, you know, you'll just take care of it. Yeah. You know, so
see, look at that. See, and that's the reason I asked you, why do you think that is, right? Yeah. And what it sums up to be or boils down to is trust. They trust you, right? So that trust and responsiveness, right? Mm-hmm. They know that, hey, you know, they can get in touch with you pretty much any time of day, right? Whether you respond or not, they know eventually you'll respond to them in a timely fashion, you know, and that's huge, man. And this is why, no matter what industry you're in, you are in the people business, right? You're dealing with people, you know, so people need to know how much you care, you know, and that builds rapport and trust over the course of time. So I love the fact that you share that example. That's what it's really all about. You know, we all have gifts, ability, talents, knowledge. You know, we're here to serve each other. You know, how can we do that effectively and well? But before you can even share any of that, you have to gain their trust first, right? And that's a beautiful example, man. I love the fact that you share that.
I think in the digital world, that's even more important.
Absolutely.
Because another person within that industry is so much more accessible.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trying out a new mechanic. He worked on my vehicles one time. You know, I brought it back, and I'm not so pleased with it. Some communication and things like that this time around. So they don't realize, like a lot of people aren't really realizing that, because it's, oh, I'll get clients anyway.
Yeah.
But that slow drip of people not satisfied, and I can just kind of Google search, you know, another, you know, great mechanic in the area. You can easily be replaced way more than in previous years when it wasn't such a digital world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's important to keep your clients' interest top of mind, right? This is why, you know, we preach customer experience. Everything is about customer experience. You can be the best auto shop in the area, but it's all about how happy are your customers with your service delivery. What's the quality of it versus quantitative, you know, how many clients you're getting in? Because in a drop of a dime, you know, you're losing one customer today, tomorrow is two, and then just comes until you realize that, hey, where did all my customers go? They're going to your competitor, right? Who's actually focused on the customer experience. So it starts with the little stuff. You know, how does your clerk greet them as soon as they step into your building? Right. That matters, right? Do you have coffee available? You know, do you ensure that if they have to wait in the waiting room, you know, is there something there to entertain them, right? For whatever the case might be. Or maybe you provide a level of courtesy where you give them a loan vehicle to just drive around, you know, no farther, maybe 20 miles, you know, so they're not stuck in your building. Whatever the case might be, those little incentives go a long way. And this is why, or this is part of the reason why customer experience is huge.
Right.
And let's talk about corporations, you know, businesses that are selling services, you know, customer experience becoming even that much more imperative for businesses to look at their operation from that perspective, because technology is democratized now. Right. You know, as a startup, I can take advantage of high tech, AI, you know, robotic processing, all these various things as a small business, because I no longer have to purchase the hardware, mm-hmm. right? I just subscribe to it. And one thing we share here is that you should look at technology as a utility, right? The same way you pay for your cable, or your same thing right. where you subscribe to your streaming services and your other utilities, technology is not a subscription base. So with that being said, it's up to the imagination. You know, you can be as innovative as you want now, right? Because you no longer have to invest, you know, huge amount of dollars to build out that data center, that huge infrastructure, mm-hmm. right? So if everyone can do that in the business space, your competitor as well as you, what is right. the differentiating factor? Why should I come to your business and spend money versus your competitor? Yeah. And this is where that customer experience comes in, you yeah. see? So what are you doing differently to truly show the value to your customer to boost up that overall customer experience, right?
And you know, that's a good point about customer experience, because so, you know, through, you know, changes and things like that with my agency, there's a lot of focus on integration of yeah. systems, integration of customers,
yes.
integration of data.
Yes, yes.
All for the end result of to keeping that high customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so much effort put into that. That's how much, you know, how important this whole teams. So to make sure, do we have emails, you know, that are synced up from conversations we were having before?
Yeah.
You know, are all of our files in the right places? Because how bad of a customer experience is it going to be when that same person that has been with us for years calls in,
mm-hmm.
gives their information, you know? Normally, if you've been a long-term client,
right.
especially if you're, you know, a you know, nice size client, you want to be able to just give your name. Hey, this is Jim from XYZ Plumbing.
Right, right.
You know, you want to just say that. You don't want to have to, you want it to be the same, you know, the
yeah.
same type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the way down to the little things.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we can't find, you know, what was your number again?
Right.
Or, I've been a client for
right.
10 years, but... like, come on. Like,
right.
I understand that's frustrating, because that would be frustrating
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and these are all the things that someone else is focusing on doing better.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, and to piggyback off of that, this is why, you know, with Low Key Solutions, we focus, even though we're an IT shop, we focus on business processes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately that impacts your customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
How efficient are your business processes? Are they sound enough? Does, you know, the A team know what the B team is doing, right?
Right.
Because they're all servicing the same clients, right? So the more fluid that your yep. operation runs, the overall impact, you know, it has on your customer experience, right? So looking at customer experience from the perspective of business processes and operation. Do you have enough efficiency, enough transparency and visibility into your operations that those who are servicing your customers, they are well equipped to deliver quality service mm-hmm. to these guys, right?
Right?
And you know, it comes with data, it comes with analyzing that data, it comes with the steps and tasks and various business activities mm-hmm. that you conduct to carry out that outcome, right?
Yeah.
It's huge,
yeah.
It's huge.
And you know what I realized is, because I like to do business with my clients. So if like I personally need something,
right.
I like to, if I can, you know, reach out to one of my clients. I realized that a lot of them could use your services
yeah.
as far as bringing me in as a client,
uh-huh.
you know what I'm saying? And really perfecting that process.
Right.
Because the thing that I realized is as a lot of businesses grow,
mm-hmm.
as they gain more clients,
right.
they start to, as that happened with us,
it's, right.
you start to, at a point, erode on customer experience because you're trying to juggle so much.
Yeah, great word of selection.
And you
I
have
like
to
that.
Dial back
yeah.
on, okay, you know, we're getting so much traffic,
yeah.
but we're like not delivering like we were before.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So I definitely want to do more introduction for you to businesses that I'm working with, because I'm realizing that that's something that people are struggling
with. Absolutely.
Is really a seamless process to getting me in as a client,
yeah.
whatever selection
yeah.
I'm making, and then all the way to the end result, which is paying.
Right.
you know, that sometimes that's a rocky road.
and along that road, you can lose the client easily, right? Maybe you did, you put the effort in, you attracted them, they're interested, you capture their attention. Now they're trying to work with you. But along that path, if it's not seamless enough, right? If that customer experience is lacking, guess what? You can lose them before you even close the deal, right?
Because we've experienced that before. It's been like a drop of the ball of communication where maybe someone called in and, you know, they needed a quote by a certain time and someone just wasn't able to get either just communicate on a timeline.
Ooh, that's huge.
You know, so that right there is that communicating on a timeline that could save so many deals.
People don't even understand. Yes,
you can have nothing.
Yes.
You can say, because I've done this before. You can, and this is a nugget right here.
Right.
You can say, I'll have whatever your industry is, I'll have it done by Friday. I'm talking on Monday, I'll have it done by Friday. You realize Thursday, I'm not going to have it done.
Right.
Because you know, like, you need to be responsible enough. You know, if something's due the next day, you're not going to have it done. You can just connect with the client and say, hey, you can, to be honest, you can throw anybody in. Underwriter. You know, computer, whatever.
Yeah, the blame game. That's what I call it. Yeah.
I'm working with XYZ.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I give you a call on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, XYZ?
Yeah.
Most time, what they're gonna say yes or no.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff is not an emergency.
Right.
You know, most there's gonna be select things where like I don't know, I need it today, and then you know it's a different situation, but. I'll say a good 85% of the people are going to say, that's fine.
And that's huge. And that speaks to customer experience, right? Being transparent with your clients, right? They understand we're at the end of the day, we're all humans, right? Nothing ever goes according to plan. There's always going to be, you know, mishaps, you know, there's going to be challenges because there's so many levels of dependencies, right? Regardless of who you are, it takes a team, right, to make anything happen. So there's always dependencies there. And yes, it's very appreciated. And that's one thing it's been my practice. Since I started my career is to always be forthcoming with my clients, right? Or my stakeholders to say, hey, you know, I know we talked about having this delivered to you XYZ day. However, you know, it seems like we may need a little bit more time. You know, does that work for you, right? And then I always give them a few options, you know? So it just depends on the scope, right? So in my world, I work with a lot of projects, right?
Yeah.
So a project doesn't last forever. It has to have a start date and an end date, right? And then along that journey, there's milestones, there's discoveries that are made that your initial plan, you know, may have to be tweaked, right, to address that new discovery, that new piece of information that you discover along that journey, right? And, you know, as long as you keep the communication lines open, that's key. Whether you're going to meet a deadline, whether you're unable to deliver on what you promised initially, or whatever the case might be, keeping the communication line open, being forthcoming and transparent with your client, it goes a long way. It's huge, you know, and I'm very big on trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this is why I take that approach, because, you know, I'd rather hear it from you, give me the bad news, and let me process it and deal with it the way I need to deal with it. But I appreciate you for being honest.
Say,
you
know? Don't be afraid to deliver bad news.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and do it in a way that you're just as upset.
Yeah.
You know, like it's
like it actually bothers you too, right?
I thought that we had everything, you know, but they came back. You know, we gotta, it's gonna be a few more days.
We
need this one more document.
Right.
Like, don't be afraid to deliver bad news. Like, I'll deliver bad news all the time. You know, I'll say, like, you know, we thought, you know, we thought it was gonna be okay, but I mean, during this COVID stuff,
yeah,
I was delivering bad news all day.
Yeah. You know? All day. I mean, there was enough bad news to go around back then.
But for what it's worth, like, people, appreciate you being
candid and honest.
Just upfront, you know.
Absolutely.
So people, they don't look at the bad news like it's your.
Yeah.
You know, they look, you're just trying to help out, and this is something that happened along the way.
Exactly.
You know, but if you don't communicate anything, then people are gonna be like, well,
It's all about expectations, right? And when expectations change, you need to communicate that, right? So they can understand what's going on. You know, one of our strategies when we work with a client is that, you know, we help them keep us honest as well. You know, so most people, they come in, you know, once you've signed the contract, you know, the proposal, whatever the case might be, you know, you may not hear from them until the work is completed, you know, or they might reach out to you at certain touch points. Yeah. But with us, we actually lay out an execution plan. Here's what's going to take to get you from your current state to the future state. Here's the projected timeline of delivery, right? And then we have an actual timeline of delivery. So that way you have that at the forefront and you can keep us honest. You know exactly when to expect what, at what milestone you can expect certain deliverables to occur. Right. And we're checking in with you along the way as well. You know, so you have that level of visibility and transparency when you work with us, you know, and I think that also helps solidify trust, you know, in the long run, you know, and that's the way I prefer to work. Right. So I would never, as a, you know, if you are my client, I won't leave you in the dark. You know, we'll set the right expectation. If we're not the right fit, guess what? We'll help you find most best suited provider for you to address that need, you know, because, you know, I am very selective in who we decide to work with. Like, you don't want to work with just anybody because, you know, there are folks out there who don't have realistic expectation, right? And they don't want to pay for it, you know. I mean, they want the stars and the moon, but they're not willing to pay for it, right?
The best thing that I've definitely, you can solve a lot, you can save a lot of time in covering those hard things and upfront conversations.
Right.
You know, someone will come to me with a certain type of risk that I know is really expensive. I'll say, if it's like, you know, the first time doing it, I'll say, this is going to be expensive. You know, there's just there's no cheap option. Like, there's just no way around it. Just to get that, you know, and some people, they'll be like, what do you think? And I feel like that does some people so much good because sometimes they'll be like, I'm gonna have to go back to the drawing board. In my budget, I can't make sense of this right now.
Right.
So that saves people because people have gotten into stuff, purchased assets, you know, got employees and things like that ready, and then the insurance was the last piece, and it was just too expensive. And they were like, man, this is just like, it doesn't make sense.
And that's why it's important to do your homework, reach out, have the conversation, get the facts before you make decisions, right? Absolutely, man. So let's go ahead and just take a quick break here, and then we'll continue the next segment. On this segment, I want to talk about livelihoods and what I personally feel is happening with the trajectory of just the work situation and business as relates to the future, right? Because prior to, so pre-COVID, prior to the pandemic, technology was already driving us to a more digitally driven world. And then the pandemic happened and it accelerated it, right? Businesses who didn't want to invest in, you know, technology, you know, because they saw technology more as an expense versus an enabler, right? They now realize the benefit of technology. I mean, it's no longer an option, it's a necessity if you want to remain competitive 3, 5, 10 years from now. So fast forward to where we are today, where these businesses have realized the benefit of leveraging emerging technologies, AI, you know, robotic process automation, you know, smart automation, IoT, you name it. They've seen the benefit. Not only that, the fact that, you know, you have more of your workforce working remotely, that reduces your overhead costs. So, you know, there's people on different side of the fence here, but to me, you either adapt to change or you're going to die or be left behind, right? And that is happening not only in the work space, but also in the business realm, and that technology is making the impossible possible. So it's all about, you know, how big is your thinking, you know, how innovative are you, how creative are you to leverage the resources you have available to create something innovative and new and that benefits the marketplace. So with that being said, as businesses realize, you know, there's specialized technologies that exist, you know, that allows me to possibly reduce my workforce by 30%, right? It doesn't mean AI is going to replace everyone's job, but technology exists now and it's more intelligent now, more sophisticated, that guess what? I'm a decision maker at large company ABC. And, you know, I realized that this technology, if we onboard this technology, I can reduce and save the company X amount of dollars and possibly reduce my workforce by 30%. I'm inclined to entertain that idea, right? Because as a business, it doesn't mean I'm bad for making that decision. Yes, right. Jobs will be lost. It will impact livelihoods, but I have to make decisions based on what makes business sense, right? And with that being said, I'm trying to compete in the marketplace. So if I can curb my expenses, my operational costs, you know, I'm inclined to do that. But what does that mean for the employees, the workers that were laid off or let go? Now they're back in the job hunt, right? Mm-hmm. They're now in the it's open season, you know, and they're now competing, looking for another job. So now the job market will be more complex. Why? Because you're not only competing with other talent individuals out there. You're not competing with technology.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So what happens 3, 5, 10 years from now when this becomes more prominent, when businesses widely adopt these various technology, you know, how does that make your ability to get a job, job retention, retain a job, because you're not only competing with talent individuals, you're competing with technology as well. So let's say I onboard all these, you know, smart bots or software bots, if you will, right? Robotic process automation is what I'm thinking of. And, you know, I have a business unit that consists of 5 members who handles maybe payroll. But now I have an automated technology that handles the majority of their task, mm-hmm. right? So I can reduce that business unit from 5 individual resources to 2. And all they do is monitor, validate what the robots are doing, you see? So that's a prime example of how this thing can roll out into the future. This is something I've always had in mind back in 2017, 2016. Yeah. This possibility exists. It's real now.
Even and to some folks, it's not.
Say that again?
Even all the way to like McDonald's.
Yeah.
Encouraging you to go to the kiosk.
Right.
Rather than
that's
going
true.
To the
self-service.
To the
right, yeah,
you
self-service.
Know, but I feel like... we have to look at it in a different way, other than that it's taking jobs away. Because I feel like, you know, I feel like just there's a disservice done to people in general, because it's really all about just shifting the skill set. It's not about the jobs going away.
Yeah.
It's about the jobs are shifting, because even with all the technology, there's going to be people that need to service it.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be people that... even if you talk about industries that are taking away more administrative, maybe because that can be a little bit more automated, like operators, more just, you know, an automated system, you have more time for actual professionals on they can do what you can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't, as the professional, the face of the business, you can't put a robot on that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that gives you more opportunity to invest in another person that would have that high level of capability.
Absolutely.
Which their ROI will be way greater than, you know, someone to answer the phone.
Exactly.
So I think it's also a shifting of mindset. Because I pulled up to a 7-Eleven the other day and I noticed that they had one of those big mailboxes for Amazon in front.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a guy, you know, just servicing it. Yeah. And you know, I'm like, there's going to need to be a lot more of these guys, because there's going to be a lot more of these mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not just a 7-Eleven, there's probably going to be at every, you know, major type of grocery store and everything. There's going to be these things.
So, yeah. Or they might just have a hub where this thing sits.
And you need a whole bunch of technicians.
Exactly.
You know, there's going to be a shortage of those guys. Because no one's going to realize that that's there.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said it's a shift in mindset, is a shift in how you look at this. And that's what this is all about. Future readiness is helping people adopt the right mindset, right? Which is that digital mindset, understanding that the old conventional way of doing things are going away, right? So you need to be more innovative in your thinking and think more digitally. How is technology shaping and changing work? You know, certain professions, occupations, and how businesses are conducting business, and then upskill in the right skill sets. so you can be that new technician that's servicing those kiosk machines and things of that nature.
Right.
100% agree, man. Well said, well said. Yeah, so, you know, and along with that, you know, we all know that there's no such thing as job security, right?
Yeah. You know, your job security now is your branding.
Yeah, personal branding. And that's why that personal branding is important, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to diversify your skill set to bring more value to a given employer as well. You see what I'm saying? And that's where all of that upskill, you know, and shifting mindset comes in, you know, and we hope to help people make better sense of this through this podcast and the content that we share. But that's spot on, you know, that mindset is the first thing. What do you think the most powerful thing in the world is? And it could be anything.
Attention.
Okay, I agree. And I know why you said that. Because it goes with you anywhere you go, right? With all this noise on the digital landscape, right, being able to retain people's attention is so invaluable, right? And I know exactly why you said that. You know, but what I would say is the human will, the willingness to learn, the willingness to adapt and change. To me, I think that's the most powerful force, because change doesn't happen until we decide we want to change. But naturally, as human beings, we don't embrace change, right? Mm-hmm. It takes a major occurrence to happen for us to really want to change.
Like, we could get your attention
COVID-19
with this podcast to go ahead and change.
Exactly.
And then you'll change.
Hopefully, right? But that's the thing. Like, all we can do is share the information, right? And share everything we talked about, mindset, frameworks, all of that. But it's up to the individual listening in the audience to say, hey, this makes sense to me, right? Even though it makes sense, what are you doing about it? Are you executing? How are you applying that information and what you're learning? Mm-hmm. And that's why I say the most powerful thing is the human will, because the change doesn't happen until they do, right? Success starts with them, right? And we know success doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. Yeah. So that process doesn't initiate or begin until you make that conscious decision that I want to change. You see? And that's why I said, well, the human will, the willingness to do anything starts, you know, and which we all have the power to. It's not easy. And it's hard for many, especially when you're so caught up with your daily hustle and bustle. I believe we're at the time now where you have to change. No matter how you feel, you need to change. You need to start looking at the world around you differently.
Yeah.
Start understanding these various technologies that are coming about and how they will ultimately impact your ability to retain a job. Talking about job security, right? Mm-hmm. Or the ability to get a job. Or how can you better yet leverage it to create a business or some kind of innovative offering to the world and serve people and serve others. And that's where that mindset needs to come in. Mm-hmm. If you want to remain an employee, guess what? Upskill. Start learning, you know, and don't just upskill in anything. Upskill and build your knowledge base on certain technology that's going to influence work and business. Mm-hmm. Or start your own business and hedge your bet against this future, because there's no such thing as job security. Any one of us is replaceable, right? Mm-hmm. And now, guess what? The folks that businesses will be looking to hire, and every business is cut from different cloth, have different needs, but you need to have a diversity of skill sets to bring more offering to the table of a given employer, right? Because if I have two candidates on the table, this one specializes in, let's say, AI. This one specializes in AWS, right? They both graduated from Harvard. They're both Harvard graduate. They seem like intelligent people. But this one on the side, he actually has a lab at home where he's building his own AI, right? While this one just has the credentials, but he's not doing anything outside of that, right? So I might be more inclined to hire this particular candidate over one. And because he's actually has his own lab, he's learning, he's making discoveries, real-time discovery that can benefit me as an employer. So these are the various things that hiring managers will be considering. You know, how quickly can you learn, right? Yeah. How committed are you to learn? Because now it's life learning, man. To me, I believe in continuous learning. Learning should never stop, especially more now than ever, right? So,
you know, one phrase that should go away this time is people saying, you know, well, I don't get paid to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is we're in such a different time right now. I feel like you don't really have the luxury to say like don't get paid, because I feel like you always, you know, if you're in an industry that you want to move up in it, then you have to be willing to do things that you're not gonna necessarily be upfront compensated for, or take the next few extra steps, because what else is going to separate you from, you know, someone else?
Absolutely.
That they're just, you're just waiting on, you know, a raise or waiting on a promotion or something like that.
Absolutely.
And now, you know, every budget is thin.
Yeah.
Every company is trying to see, okay, where can we save money at? Where can we, you know, cut down on? So, you know, they're going to look for the person that, oh, they're looking for the extra training. Oh, they're putting whatever else other effort more forward than, you know, the other individuals, well, they're going to probably be more first in line for, you know, whatever promotion or anything in that.
Yeah.
Like I said, even if you're trying to really just move up in your career or job or,
Climb whatever, that corporate ladder.
You know, even people in the government, like, you know, that I've seen, because a lot of my family is in government, I've seen those opportunities just go way down from before. There was like tons of jobs and things like that. Now they're being more selective about, you know, who they're bringing up higher.
Exactly, because they're trying to compete with China.
Yeah, man.
You know, everything's with that digital movement, man. And it's huge, you know, because it's like a new frontier, right? And we're behind a bell curve as a nation. That's what I personally believe.
We don't train our people on the necessary skills that they need right now. We still have kids learning just pointless things in school.
Exactly. When we should be moving more to digital learning, right? And when I say digital learning, what I mean by that is really, they call it STEM, right? Mm-hmm. You know, helping kids really truly understand science and technology, right? You know, from biotech to, you know, these various aspects of technology that we need to start grooming our youth, right? So they can be in position to effectively compete as a nation. I mean, forget individual family units, communities, and businesses, but collectively as a nation, right? We need to start uplifting and instilling the right education and mindset into our youth for the future. So as a nation, we compete with other countries, right? Because, I mean, I look at a country like Africa, right? Where, you know, they're, you know, for the most part, people will say that they are a developing country, right? They're not fully developed yet, right? But guess what? Because of the smartphone, they are able to skip certain evolution periods. Like with us, we started with infrastructures, right? With telecommunication infrastructure, house phones, right? Before we got smartphones. But they took a leap. They passed that, right? Even though some of them have that capability, but the country as a whole doesn't need to spread out that infrastructure to ensure everyone has a phone in their home. Why? Because they all have smartphones, easily accessible. And they do the majority of their activities on that smartphone, you see? Yep. So to an extent, they've embraced and fully immersed in leveraging the digital landscape through their smartphone, right? While some people in this country can't get past the conventional way of doing things. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So give them 3, 5, 10 years from now, you know, and certain companies invested in that country and the technology evolution, what does that country look like, you know, 10 years from now, right? And if we're not making moves here to educate our kids accordingly, right? What does that look like for us? So this stuff is huge, man. It's huge. There was, before I touch on the last point here, you know, let's talk about, you know, technologies, the type of technologies that are kind of driving this evolution, right? Because startups are experiencing exponential growth. You can start, because there's microservices that exist out there. Let's say I just want to create an API that integrates two systems, right? That could be my sole purpose as a startup. And as long as value for it, people are willing to pay for it, guess what? You have a profitable startup and you can scale very quickly by leveraging today's technology, right? So one thing I know that you love is cryptocurrency, right? What technology does cryptocurrency sit on? You know,
it's the blockchain.
It's the blockchain, right? See, and that technology alone is not only applicable to cryptocurrency, but also when it comes to like security and privacy. So think about the use cases involved with blockchain.
I think almost every application that's transferring information, they're gonna, it's probably gonna be on some type of Ethereum blockchain
or
something similar. Because that way of keeping a history with the ledger, it's just, there's just no more efficient way to keep information right.
Exactly. And I agree 100%. And that's actually what I refer to as like the next phase of internet, like internet 2.0, right? Because now that we all have come to that realization and see the benefit of internet, right? We're doing more shoppings online. I mean, pretty much everything, right? But there's more engagement happening online. The only thing that's a concern is security. How do we protect everything that we're doing online, right? From the content that you create to ensure you have sole ownership and someone is not duplicating what you have, you know, and benefiting from it. Or monetizing it without your consent, to, you know, your financial transaction, you know, through your bank account, you know, whatever the case might be. To me, internet 2.0 is really going to be built on top of the blockchain, because now you have that ability to control your privacy. You have that ability to track things, right? But what comes with that privacy is transparency as well. Know, it's, anyone can dig into it as long as they have authorization to do so, right? So it does help people keep people honest as well, right? And that means everything you do is trackable and traceable.
I think it's going to be huge in the insurance. I think so.
Why you say that?
Because of the transparency. Because things like, I think that there's, you know, when it's going to happen, you know, I have no idea, but I'm betting that there's going to be some type of change to where, especially like claim, like all the records of a claim will be on some type of blockchain. Because then we'll be able to clearly see, you know, everything that happened throughout the life of
the life cycle of the claim.
Know, so I can't imagine another efficient way.
Too,
because that's something that gets confusing sometimes, especially if like it's a large claim and maybe there's, you know, different adjusters from different companies or things like that. I think that stuff like that is down the road. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, absolutely. It's happening now, man. I can tell you, you know, would you believe that? There's someone working on these things right
now.
And that's the goal. It's, you know, knowing that this technology is that security, right, and that transparency, especially with the capability of Ethereum, you know, which is digital contracts, right? Applicable financial institutions already leveraging this, right? JP Morgan and all these big players, they're already leveraging this technology, and it's only going to permeate throughout other industries, right? So I'm sure someone's already working on that piece right now, you know. And what I love about the blockchain too as well is the share capability it presents to browsers, right? Because now, you know, I think someone could develop a browser, and I think there might be, there's a few that has the concept, but I'm not sure how robust they are, like Brave. That's a browser that just out there, not many people are aware of it. I love Firefox because there's so many plugins you can add to really prevent people from tracking you, right? And retargeting you over the web, that, you know, eventually, you know, these browsers will have VPN capabilities, you know, directly within the browser without having to purchase a third-party VPN, right? These VPN will give you more control. So I think a browser will be repurposed more than just searching the web, but giving you the ability to control every content that might exist out there in the web, you know, once it starts living on a blockchain infrastructure. That's my take, right? And we're probably giving a lot of people ideas out here on what to look, you know, to create, you know, but... And that's the skinny of it, you know, and I don't want to, I mean, we can delve deeper, but we might save that for another segment, because I do have additional thoughts I would love to share regarding that. But these are the various applications that I think should be top of mind for many people to factor into their thought process before you pick a career. You know, before you decide to start a business, you need to be forward thinking that how will these technology disrupt my industry or the business I'm trying to create. Because many people start a business to either leave a legacy for their loved one or to control more of their own livelihood. But if you start the business providing the wrong product or service, your business might be short-lived, right? So it's important to factor these things in, you know? And I look at an example, typically I kind of keep these things confidential, but hey, you know, we're having a great conversation right now. But, you know, I look at CPAs, you know, there's a lot of CPAs out there, whether they're doing personal taxes or business taxes. But we know a software like TurboTax exists where I can process my own tax, right? And but what happens when that particular software is infused with AI, artificial intelligence, and now it serves as my tax advisor. It can advise me as I'm completing my tax. It can surf the IRS regulations and give me real-time, up-to-date information that influences my decision-making and advise me on what selection, what write-offs to make to get the most maximum return, you see? So what does that do to the profession of CPAs? You know, it doesn't mean it'll replace them 100%, but it may reduce.
You have to bring different value.
You have to. Exactly.
Like, I've been thinking about that. So when I did my taxes on TurboTax, I had some things that I, you know, wasn't 100% sure on, and I was able to bring in a guy live. You know, so with that type of, like, immediately,
exactly.
You know, with that, I didn't have to set an appointment.
Yeah.
Like, it was, and the guy walked me through everything, you know, whether or not, who knows if, you know, he was the most knowledgeable, but he was he basically was able to walk me through the platform with certain questions, with really all the questions I had. And it pretty much tells you if you're just giving all the numbers, it'll tell you if you're doing something. So, you know, I look at that and I'm like, you know, I mean, I was able to, it worked, you know? And then I also look at the financial industry with, like, financial advisors, you know, I'm like, man, with all this, these different platforms that really can automate, you know, when you should buy, and because there's several technical analysis that can be automated as far as any type of asset, whether it's crypto or stocks and things like that, that just with the technical analysis, you can maximize your investment by, you know, if it's at this point, buy, you know, if it's at this point, sell. You know,
And
do I need an advisor? So it's like, I'm trying to understand, especially because I work with, you know, financial advisors and things like that. I'm trying to understand, what do you think is next? I don't know. I don't know if that is going to be, because personally, I don't use a financial advisor. You know,
me too.
I can't really see, I'm trying to understand what the value would be unless, you know, I can see if you have, you know, some huge, like, you know, you got $100 million you need, but then again, then I don't,
I think part of the value for them is the credentials, right? Because they go through, you know, the value is regulatory related, meaning that as a, once you're certified and you go through appropriate training and all of that jazz, have the appropriate credential, you have now the capability to commit certain financial transactions by law, right? That other individuals, no matter how knowledgeable they are, they can't commit or transact that level of activity, right? It limits, you know, they have the ability to create larger transactions, right? So that's what they can move more money around, because of regulation. But what happens when regulation transfers to AI, right? So then where does that value go? Because right now we see the trend happening right now, right? We've seen what Robinhood has done and really forced, you know, zero commission, and really forced TD Ameritrade and all these big players to shift their models as well, right? And these financial advisors, now guess what? They are leveraging these financial instruments or tools that have AI capability to advise, right? Individuals on where to invest and crunch numbers and aggregate data and all that. So they are leveraging these tools now. But that next level of innovation where these financial tools actually becomes intelligent enough and more sophisticated enough where you can, for the most part, remove the human element. You see what I'm saying? And now it's direct to consumer. Now I can onboard or install this tool or access the platform or ecosystem, and it's feeding me everything I need to know so I can make my own decisions. You see?
And especially when, so there's a company called the Intercontinental Exchange. You can actually trade them on the stock market. It's, the ticker symbol is ICE.
Okay.
They own all. They own the stock market, and they own all the exchanges in London and China and all that stuff. They're coming up with a platform that is going to have all assets on the blockchain. So then you'll be able to sell stock
for USD coin on Saturday.
So you're looking at,
you know, so.
So you don't need to wait for the market to open. You don't need
the people on the floor to, because even now, even with these apps, like when you're submitting the trade, like there's someone still, completing the trade on the floor.
Exactly.
But without that, that's why I'm really, some of it, it's a little scary to think about because it is going to be such a huge mindset shift because it is going to displace a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking what value would, you know, someone be as an advisor, I guess, when there's, like I said, there's so much AI, there's so much accessibility, they're definitely going to have to think about other forms of value to enter into the business. And I've definitely been seeing a lot more financial advisors go more like B2B, like they're trying to set up retirement funds and things like that. I kind of think that's like the future.
Because
there's still always going to be a need for that.
Absolutely.
For large companies to set up, you know, you're going to have some sort of broker or agent that's leading that. I've definitely been seeing them lean more towards that because we all kind of see what's going on. Even in the insurance industry, a lot of like, you know, people, they spend their whole career doing personal insurance.
Right.
They're trying to get more into business insurance because they realize there's so much marketed to people as far as quote here, quote for your personal insurance. Your insurance company is screwing you. Do this, do this. You know, so it's, the marketplace is crazy for personal insurance right now.
Yeah, that's true. And that retirement, there was a startup recently, I forgot what they, it was almost like success overnight because it really changed their whole retirement game. It was a while since I looked into that, but I can't recall what the specific model was, but they reimagined retirement programs, right? So they made investing in your retirement easier.
It sounds kind of similar to Acorns because Acorns is another one where you can pretty much automate. Are you a not passive, are you like a moderate type of investor? Are you really aggressive, you know, are you kind of aggressive, really aggressive? And that's nothing more than AI, like put you know, sectioning out your money, and the returns on that are like, they're better than what, you know, what a traditional investment firm would offer you. And it's just like, it's just things like that are definitely going to, as they become more and more popular, even like how Cash App, you can get stocks and things like that on, you know, the mindset of so much is going to have to change, you know, as we move more and more into the future. And even like, I understand what's going on in my industry, you know, which is why we're always trying to innovate and, you know, stay ahead of things and do things different, because that's another like commodity type industry, you know, insurance and finances. And, you know, like those are like, you can, I can, you know, throw a rock and like hit 10 more insurance
companies, right. You know,
but it's like, how are you different? Than the next. And we're real big on offering resources that may or may not have to do with the actual policy that we're writing for you. Those types of things are invaluable because people are all about like one-stop shops nowadays.
Yeah, that's true. And that's where brand loyalty comes in, right? So the more you differentiate yourself and really focus on that customer experience, right, and deliver quality service, the more you have loyal clients, you know, clientele. I mean, Apple, I just think they have it right. You know, people just purchase Apple product because, you know, they're just dedicated fans. I know we are running out of time here, so let's touch on this last point. You know, this is directly to the audience. You know, we're talking about, you know, a shift in mindset, you know, really adopting more digital driven mindset and understanding how technology is shaping and changing the future of work in business. You know, it's important for you to really think for yourself how these various changes are going to impact you directly, right? And your ability to control your own livelihood. One thing that I believe is that we all need to start creating digital assets for ourselves. And not digital asset from the sense of financial instruments, but in the context of creating a digital intellectual property. So when I say digital asset, I'm referring to intellectual property, creating intellectual property that lives in the digital landscape, right? So one way to look at it is from this construct. We all know what a real estate is, right? It's a piece of property, a land, you know, hopefully you own that property or land and you're not still paying on it. And that sits in a specific jurisdiction or locality. Now, take that concept and shift it to the digital landscape, right? The World Wide Web, the internet is that digital landscape, right? And it's important for each and every one of us to create a prime real estate. And that prime real estate is your website, right? That website can be as lavish as you want it to be, or it could be a single pager, depending on what you're trying to put into the marketplace or into the world, whether it's knowledgeable content, whether it's informative in nature, whether it's training courses, whatever the case might be. The idea is that these are your brainchild, right? Your intellectual property that you decide to push out and share to the world. And it lives in this digital landscape through your website, right? That is your primary real estate. And now you can leverage all these other channels, social media platforms to drive people to that primary real estate. I hope you guys are being able to track along with that conceptual thinking that I just shared there. Because here, we're not just giving you information, we're actually giving you ways to think through it and how to apply certain information and methodology that we've shared here. Building intellectual property and digital asset for yourself is key to the future. Why is that? It puts you in a driver's seat to some degree. Maybe you don't build a full business around whatever it is that you create, but it does help you edge your bet against the ability to control your own livelihood in case of a job loss. I talked about it earlier. Data is the new oil, right? And Bitcoin is the new digital gold, right? So, but when you look at data, data drives everything. You know, you talk about cryptocurrency, you talk about everything that's taking place online. It's all driven by data. Even AI is driven by data, right? So by you creating these digital asset and intellectual property for yourself that lives in the worldwide web, that digital landscape, guess what? You position yourself to begin to collect more data, right? Not only collect more data, meaning that as people visit and engage with your content, that is data that you're able to collect. And whatever your intellectual property is, that digital asset that you're pushing out and creating and publishing to your primary real estate is also a form of data that a startup company may want to take that data to build and train their own AI. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They're willing to pay you a hefty price for that data, for access to that data. So this is a way you can hedge your bet. And this is why I personally believe it's important to begin to create these type of digital assets for yourself, mm-hmm. which are intellectual property. And these digital assets come in different forms and shapes, right? Video content, you know, many people are starting podcasts now, you know, and I think that's part of it. Like you'll see like Shannon Sharp, right? You'll see like individual people that work for major media companies that are creating their own individual, you know, YouTube channel or podcast. Yeah. There's a reason behind that, right? And this is why, and even before all this took place, these are thoughts I had back in 2017, where, you know, just following the trajectory of technology, you know, I understood it was moving us to a more digital world, you know, and because I was faced with this decision myself, and I'll share that story at a later time because it is kind of lengthy, but the gist of it is I was in a position where I had to think about how technology was going to impact my position and my ability to provide for my family just because I'm a knowledge-based worker. I get paid for my knowledge. So if you can pass and digitize all the information in the world and pass that to AI, right, what does that leave me as a knowledge-based worker? So that was my thought process back then. And I believe one way we can hedge our bet is by creating digital assets for ourselves. And that's one possibility that someone may reach out to you because they want to collect that data. During 2020, I think it was American Airlines, they were able to secure, like, I don't know the exact dollar amount, but I'm going to say around maybe $2 million, right? It might be more than that, well, north of that, but they were able to secure a loan. Guess how they were able to secure it and what collateral they leveraged?
that information, bro.
Data, yeah, the data from their rewards plan. Mm-hmm. So everybody who subscribed to their rewards program, that's the data that they leverage as collateral to obtain that loan. Think about that for a second, right? This is why it's important for all of us to begin to create digital assets and
Facebook
build.
Is free.
Exactly. That's why Google is free, right? Because they're benefiting from your data. Everything Google gives you is free. Why? Because you are the content. You are the product. They're collecting your data and they're benefiting from that data, you know? And guess what? Each and every one of us, we can do the same thing. And this is why it's important to create that primary real estate for yourself within this digital land. And guess what? All you need is eyeballs, right? Yeah. Let's say you have 1 million people that's consuming your content. Someone may reach out to you and say, hey, we want to post an ad on there because you are targeting our ideal audience, right? And we just want to get this information in front of them. Look how millions of dollars for a 30-second ad slot on, during the Super Bowl, right? And for them to give pay you, guess what? It's a cost reduction for marketing dollars for them to go to individual content creators or, you know, whoever, you know, to promote their product. So that's another avenue of opportunity that someone could reach out to you because you've attracted a large volume of audience. It's all about eyeballs, right? Companies want to present their products or services in front of enough audience to generate return on that investment, right? And overly convert them to paying customers. So if you can attract enough eyeballs, guess what? Someone will reach out to you. And you know, we know YouTube has that model now, but guess what? You don't have to depend on YouTube alone. You know, you can create, as long as valuable, beneficial content, you can control that realm, you know, within your own digital real estate, right? Through your website, based on the value and the benefit you bring and attracting the right type of audience, you know, and enough volume as well. So I just gave two different examples of how you can monetize and benefit from the content that you create, right? And I really believe that this is the pathway to the future, that we all should be creating something of this stature, digital asset, intellectual property, because one, you're serving others with it. Two, you're positioning yourself for the future, right? Where you can position yourself to begin to monetize on what you've created, right? So it's important to be a producer or a creator and not just a consumer. You know, I think we all need it. And when we talk about mindset shift, that's a mindset shift right there. Yeah. That's a digital mindset shift for that. So I was speaking directly to our audience there. I hope this serves you. I hope you enjoy the conversation myself and Reggie has had today. And until next time, anything you want to add?
No, just kind of, keep thinking about, you know, how you want to more adapt to the new digital landscape, you know, each day, because we're not going backwards.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's
the old way of doing things is done, right? It's definitely a new normal, man. We're not going back. There was just too much realized during the pandemic that is changing the future of work and business, you know? And that's why we're here. So thanks for spending time with us today. We appreciate your time, you know, taking the time out of your already busy schedule, you know, your daily hustle and bustle to spend time with us here on the Future Readiness Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Lakin Oladipo, with my colleague here, Reggie Jackson. Until next time.